Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with me. To my left, we've got Tom from Adobe. He's not going to be speaking, but he's going to be making me really, really nervous with his Coke Zero and his sense of humor about Prince. To my right, we've got Mike Fishkin. Oh, now he's pointing the phone at me. This is really scary. I don't know what to do sometimes. I'm like an insecure person as is, and then when I sit down with the CEO staring at me half giggling, I'm scared. But this interview is going to be amazing. Curtis Douglas is a friend and a client. He is based out of Arizona, where it is slightly hot right now, probably a little bit hotter than Coachella. And he's worked with so many different bands. I know The Main gets played on here all the time. He's worked with them in the past. He did the new Sundressed record, and he actually is doing some demos with them as we speak that he's sending me. So Ross Roby and I manage him, and we also manage three other producers with the Rolling Artist Company that we're going to be pretty much just doing producers. So it's pretty awesome. We've got Mr. Dave Dominguez, who is in the studio talking about recording in Mexico, which it's kind of similar to Arizona, I guess. So he has a lot of stories about that. We also have Kim Shattuck, who is in the studio, the singer of the Muffs and the Pandoras, and she is currently in South America rocking with the Muffs. So that's pretty exciting. And we also have Alex Arias, who is also in the studio. So I guess the theme of today is me, because every single person has been here interviewed in this very room, which is really comfortable in North Hollywood. Normally, North Hollywood is really hot and sweaty, but I'm feeling pretty good right now. So I hope you're enjoying the show every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time. And what's crazy about time zones is that Arizona, it changes and then it goes back, and he's in Arizona, Curtis. So he's in the same time zone as us until the next daylight savings, where he's an hour later than us. It's kind of weird. I don't know if you've ever been to that part of America where you can put your left hand in one state, your right hand in one state, your left foot and your right foot in another state. And I'm not sure if there are different time zones, but if you learn nothing from this show, you can do that with your life. It's a great life. And since we honestly don't know when this episode might air, it might be in a few weeks, it might be in the summer, I'm not going to be talking about other guests like I am the next episode I'm recording. So this is all about Curtis Douglas, producer extraordinaire based out of the humble state of Arizona, where the Mexican food is slightly better than it is in Southern California. And I love Curtis, so stick around. Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Curtis Douglas out of Arizona on the cell phone. Hello.
Hello.
Where are you right now? What are you doing?
I am in Phoenix at my studio, just laying on the couch having this phone call.
You realize that as your manager, the fact that you're laying on your couch and not doing work is very frustrating.
You told me to be comfortable for this convo, so I'm only like 2 feet away from my computer, but I'm just lounging for the call.
I'm only comfortable when you're making me money. This is not making me money.
Well, we're going to make some money today, so it'll be good.
Okay, so the dial tone's in. So, Arizona, have you lived there your whole life?
Yes, I was actually born just like 2 miles from where I'm currently laying down. And I grew up in Scottsdale and pretty much lived there a majority of my life. I moved to Austin, Texas for a couple years in the latter years, but it's pretty much been here, and now I'm back here probably for good because it's just great all year round.
Yeah, you seem really happy about it every time we speak about it. I've had a few good experiences in Arizona. My old band played this venue called Scrappies in Tucson, and aside from the fight in the parking lot, it was a really good day. And I went to a Payway at University of Arizona, but that's Tucson. What is ASU in Scottsdale? Like, what's in Scottsdale? I mean, obviously it's my name, so I'm fascinated.
Well, ASU is in Tempe.
Ah.
Which is actually where my studio is in Tempe. And, all of, like, the surrounding restaurants around my studio are all kind of, like, shared with the ASU crowd. Like, all of the college kids live, like, within a couple miles from my studio. So everywhere I go or me and the bands go to eat, it's definitely always inundated with college-age students. So I'm kind of like right in the thick of it here.
And I hear that ASU has quite an attractive female contingency. I've heard that rumor. I could be wrong.
Yeah, there's some talented people around here.
That's one thing that people didn't say about University of Michigan a lot. They said that their brains were talented. I went there, but it was a struggle.
Yeah, well, I would say a majority of my mom's side of family is from Michigan, so I've spent some time in Michigan, and the ratio of good-looking people to bad-looking people it's significant, the difference between here and there.
At the time when I went to Michigan, it was the most obese state in the country. Just to let you know
nice.
That. Yeah, I know. It was a statistic I was super proud of being a part of.
That's interesting, but I would think it would be something like, you know, more like a southern country.
It is now.
I don't know. I don't want to stereotype.
No. Let's stereotype. Let's honestly try to offend as many people as possible. I believe it's Arizona right now. I'm not sure. I'm going to look this up as we're talking about it because
there's not even a chance that it's Arizona. It's too hot here.
No, Alabama. Shit. The other AA state. Yeah, that's true. Everyone's.
I knew it had to be some sort of like chicken fried kind of state.
I'm typing in obese states in America. I mean, I live in LA and, well, granted, I mean, obviously there's a lot of beautiful people here, but I was in Asia on my honeymoon and I felt morbidly obese there. Okay, it was Mississippi is the obese state and then Louisiana.
And okay.
Yeah, well, so.
None of this surprises me. I mean, I've been to all of those states and I feel like it makes a lot of sense.
Well, what's crazy is the obesity rate in Mississippi is 35%. So that means more than one out of every three people is obese. I digress. So speaking of obesity and, you know, weight, when you're a performer and you're on stage, you're sweating, especially if you're rocking out. So did you have experience doing that? Is that what made you a svelte person? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, I have been in bands, like too many to count over the last years, and I definitely was in a couple bands that, you know, played, you know, cool big shows where there was sweating and weight losing going on for sure.
You showed me this video once on YouTube, because we share each other videos and we also send stupid bitmojis, but there was one that was very dancey, like very...
Yeah.
What was that called?
That was a band called La La Lust, and it was kind of like, that was like right at the kickoff point of like EDM music, or like mainstream EDM music, and that was like a band that I kind of just got recruited to play guitar in and stuff, and I ended up, you know, producing some of the songs and everything.
Were you a producer before that, or were you more of a musician? Around that.
Oh, I was a producer before that. I kind of got involved in that because I had produced one of the band members' old album, and they just knew that I played guitar and knew a bunch of, you know, music theory and stuff like that. So they were like, "Hey, Curtis, we need someone to play these big shows with us." And I was like, "That sounds like you know, something I'm interested in."
So, did you just honk a horn? What was that? What was that sound?
That, and I have. Me being a musician and me being a producer and an engineer have almost always been synonymous with one another. At no point was I ever just a musician that didn't, you know, kind of have a hand in recording. As soon as I kind of figured out how to get audio into a computer in like 2001 or two, it was like game over. And then I started working on the music aspect when I realized the audio that was getting into the computer wasn't as good as it could be. And they both kind of, you know, helped perpetuate one another.
But how'd you get involved in that? Because not everyone who plays guitar or writes songs is adept with that. I mean, personally, I'm not. So.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't any, like, sort of moment where I realized, oh, I have to... or I really have a call, or, you know, have some sort of weird feeling like I need to do this. I just remember, you know, being into music, and it felt like the next logical step was to start recording it. And I remember, you know, I must have been 12 or 13, and we started, you know, like just a kind of garage band, and I started, you know, trying out a couple local studios. And the frustrating thing for me was, at that point I was, you know, singing and playing guitar and stuff, and I would feel so rushed and on the clock at these studios that I felt like I wasn't able to get my best vocal performances and guitar performances and stuff. And I thought, well, it'd be great if I could just record the instruments at places and then record vocals myself and then have someone else mix it. And that was when I was like 12 or 13, and I went out and got like one of the very first M-Box audio interfaces and you know, started kind of producing my own vocals.
Did you have microphones for that? Did you have like the right equipment, or was it kind of ghetto-y?
Well, at first it was definitely less than ideal, but fairly quickly, I mean, back then, nothing was too expensive back then, ironically, because not that many people knew that you could record into a computer. I mean, this is like so long ago. This is, you know, this is like almost 15 years ago. So there back then there was big studios, and that was it.
And that was tape usually, right?
No, back then there was like Pro Tools was just like, it was out of its infancy. It was like Pro Tools was a teenager at this point. They were still working some stuff out, but Pro Tools and other DAWs were kind of, you know, going strong at that point for sure. But it was just more like the big studios were running, and either you could afford the really expensive converters and all the hardware pieces that had to go with the software, or you couldn't. And I basically just got into it at the exact perfect time when they came out with a consumer-based interface, or a couple consumer-based interfaces at that time. So, like, it just, like, lucked out, like, when I was born and when I decided to get into this, they were just kind of making it affordable and really scaling things down for people. So, yeah, I mean, not too long. I think I just saved up and, you know, did as many cheap recordings as I could and then bought some decent equipment as far as just, like, producing vocals and acoustic guitar and stuff like that. And, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much just how I got into it. And then, you know, from there it snowballed into, okay, now I can record vocals well and acoustic guitars, and let's start recording drums, let's start doing this. And, you know, every single session you learn something. And back then I was also, you know, learning a lot about music and harmonizing and arrangement and stuff like that. And so pretty quickly I kind of just got obsessed with the performance aspect, but also the engineering and arrangement.
What do you mean by performance? Do you mean capturing the best takes?
Just like, I mean, I was doing both at the same time. I was working on performing better, mm-hmm. and learning how to play music better and play more interesting parts and play tighter and know, basically that kind of like groove things. And then at the same time, I was pushing myself on the forefront of recording and, you know, digitally manipulating recordings and stuff. And at that point, there wasn't just, you know, I was young, but there also just wasn't that many people doing it, really, you know.
Did you shift your focus?
Oh, sorry.
No. You don't need to apologize. There was a point where you were talking and I was trying to get in and you couldn't hear me. And that's just how normal conversations go. Sometimes they're just two monologues. But anyway, so with recording and then being a performer, obviously, when did you shift focus to being like, you know what, like, I like playing gigs, I like playing, but that's not the forefront anymore?
I would say I really stopped wanting to be in bands when I was like 19 or 20.
It's a pretty young age to want to stop that. Usually it's you're more defeated in a later age, so that's pretty cool.
I definitely wasn't like defeated or anything. I just realized that I felt like I should be doing it. Like I felt like I was good at it, and that I was helping people make better songs, and I was helping people arrange songs that were better than they were when they came in, and I was getting vocal performances out of people that they didn't know they were capable of, and it was just a cool socially for me, because I'm a really social person, and for me, it was also, I know this is going to sound weird, but I like the fact that I can join a band in my mind or an artist on their endeavor while they're in the studio. So they come into the studio, and I feel like a fifth Beatle, and I'm in there writing guitar parts with them, and I'm in there helping on vocal arrangements and lyrics and melodies and everything, and then they leave, and then they go promote the shit out of that, and then I get to join another band the next day, and I don't have to be stuck to a style.
The technical term is whore, so that's cool that you're doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't have to be stuck to a style. I don't have to be stuck to a look. I don't have to be stuck to bandmates. I don't have to be stuck to anything. And I get to just musically hop around and enjoy everything and not ever feel like I'm trapped.
No, that's interesting you say that, because a lot of times when a band, like, for example, by the time this interview airs, this will have long happened, but recently Paramore just issued a new song. And regardless of whether you feel like it's the best song ever or the worst song ever, people, trolls, will always give them crap because, oh, it doesn't sound like Riot, which came out 10 years ago. And there's pigeonholed, whereas you can work with four or five different bands all the time, and you can work on a disco track one day and be inspired, and a pop rock track the next day, and you really, you're not limited by people's perceptions like other people who are doing this as their go-to. So that's, I've never even thought about that. That's interesting.
And for me, I was in bands where I was having to write certain styles of songs, and because I was producing music on the side, and I was listening to a bunch of different kinds of music, from like Southern rock to musicals to, you know, like Disney soundtracks to Fall Out Boy. All my songs would range in genre so far that my personal songs, at least, and my band songs would range so far, you know, and span so much distance between one another that it became hard to really even call myself or, you know, try to promote it as a band.
Right.
Because it was just, it wasn't one style, it wasn't one thing, and people, you know, I had my friends and family, not necessarily family, but friends and everyone, you know, were interested in all the songs, but it was hard to find one niche fan base.
Well, it's frenetic, but I mean, as a musician and as a writer, because obviously, I mean, every producer works differently, but you said it yourself, you become like a fifth member and help them out with parts and vocals and arrangement, all that. And some producers are more like, this works or this doesn't work, and they hit play. And you're very hands-on with that. So if you're being hands-on with all these different bands, then your own personal influences change day to day. So that's really cool that you have that experience. When you were recording, we'll touch upon this briefly, and then we'll talk about a whole bunch of products. How did you, I guess, become an in-demand producer? Because, I mean, you did it yourself. You started like 19, 20-ish really doing it. But how did you become like the guy?
Well, like, kind of like I had mentioned earlier, there wasn't that many people doing it when I first started. And so, I mean, trail off, but then come back to this answer.
Don't worry about it. We've got about 4 minutes right now for you to talk, and I can cut you off very rudely. So keep going.
Okay, great. So essentially, I was, you know, one of the only people that I knew around this. I'm trying to remember. This might have been 2006-ish, but I was one of the only people, maybe earlier, but I was one of the only people that really was recording locally at any sort of quality that wasn't like a really big studio. And this was at the age or
you were
the time where MySpace was just popping off. And back then, you either had like really shitty, like random one microphone recordings that like kind of like Office Max kind of like desktop gaming microphones or something, or you had really good recordings. And there was no really interim there. And I kind of filled that gap around town. And on MySpace, I was putting up my recordings. And back then, I always tell fans this now, that I would get like 20,000 plays in like a couple days on MySpace, because it was like so organic and blowing up at the time, and there wasn't just so much competition. Like, if you were putting out good acoustic music or good vocal productions or good anything, I mean, this is at the time when the Scene Aesthetic and Secondhand Serenade and all these bands were kind of like popping off.
The MySpace bands, like the Never Shout Nevers, like all that stuff.
Yeah, even like a little bit before, like, yeah, like at that time and even like a year or two before that whole thing. And I just, you know, would get tons and tons of plays. And I had a MySpace page that was like for me as an artist, but also for, you know, me recording. And I would say, hey, I also recorded all this stuff myself. If you're interested in recording, hit me up. And it just kind of snowballed from there.
And then you got noticed by some other people. I mean, briefly, you work with the 8123 crew. Yep.
Well, and then kind of like you were saying, to get back to the answer of how did I become, you know, like a person around here that was known for doing that, is I ended up...
Which is hard to do. I just want to say this right now. Off and on the record, that's very hard to do. I mean, to carve a name for yourself, especially at a young age. So, props.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. And I put a lot of hard work in and still do and plan on continuing to do that.
You better.
But I ended up recording some songs. This is when I was like 17, I think. I ended up recording some songs for The Maine. You know, they had just got signed to Warner Brothers. They just did like a huge, big budget record with
Howard Benson, right?
Howard Benson on Warner. And then I did the two acoustic deluxe edition songs for them. And throughout the years have helped them, you know, with, like, you know, recording here and there. And I did some songs for the lead singer's solo project called Eagles and Drag, which was kind of like a super group with Ryan from This Century and Trey, who's Garrett's brother, and then John from The Maine and Eric Halverson from Rocket to the Moon. And I did a record for them, which was Eagles and Drag. And so I kind of, you know, had been working with some bigger artists around town, and it just kind of kept going from there. And I remember really quickly, I remember one time when I was like maybe 18 or 19, this band came in and said, hey, we came to you because we heard that you'll make us sing the right harmonies and that you'll work on our melodies and basically make sure that we end up with huge sounding choruses. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Well, that's like the nicest thing a band could tell you. So.
Exactly. And I thought it was so funny because they were just like, we heard that you do harmonies. You know, like that's like musician talk. Like if they don't know about all that kind of stuff, they're like, we hear you harmonize and we like it. We wanted you to do that for us. And I'm like, great.
Well, I mean, it's a better thing for them to come to you for that than for a superficial reason. So we're going to cut you off for a second and take a little commercial break, but we'll get back to Curtis Douglas, and we're going to probably talk for at least 85 minutes about Ross Robey. So stick around. We'll be back.
Great.
All right. We're finishing this interview so Waldman can get out of Fish's face. We've got Curtis Douglas on the air right now. Say hello again.
Hello again.
So we've covered a lot. We've covered your upbringing. We've covered the fact that you gave up your own personal rock and roll dreams for the life of solitude with people. And now, I guess, what new projects have you been working with? Personally, I'm really excited about the Sundress stuff.
Sundress, yes. I just did their... And I also just did a brand new song for them. So by the time this airs, yeah. Oh, shit. Sorry, I was getting that.
Yeah, you cut out for a second.
Oh, well, I'll re-answer this question, I guess. Sundress, yes, I did their last album. And we also yesterday, finished a brand new song, which sounds just great. And
I'm a fan.
It's just going to be a fun little ditty for people to check out. And it's going to be, completely just like a bonus track that they're going to release for free. And it sounds killer. I probably shouldn't say this, but it sounds even better than their album. It just sounds great. So I'm excited for people to hear this new one and just kind of let everyone know that they are still progressing as well as I am.
So. It's catchy. It's a really smart song, especially the chorus. It kills it. So props to you for that.
Yeah, stoked on that. And
Wives. What about Wives? Let's hear about Wives. I like Wives.
Wives? yeah, I just did a new song for Wives called Jump Into the Water. It's super dope. It's like old school rock and roll. Good old fashioned. I mean, the band tracked live and we did a couple overdubs, but good old fashioned fucking rock and roll. And I mean, no auto-tune, nothing. I mean, this was just like a straight up rock and roll band.
The real deal.
The recording is just them raw as hell, and it sounds great. And if you're looking for just like an all around badass rock band to listen to, Wives is the way to go.
And in Arizona, they do quite well, right? Don't they draw quite well in Arizona now? They're kind of like an it band.
They do. They're popping off. Yeah, they're like trendy, but like not 20 trendy, like 30 trendy, if that makes sense. Like trendy for older people.
I mean, you're speaking my language.
Yeah, exactly. You'd love
like AARP trendy. It's perfect.
Exactly, exactly. And I just finished another record for this band / artist called Steph Keppen. And her band is called Steph Keppen and the Articles. And
that sounds like a Motown band name. It's awesome.
They are nothing like Motown, but they're cool like Motown.
Motown
album is called Timekeeper, and it's really great. It's definitely a departure from what I normally work on, in the sense that it's basically a piano, string, bass, drum album. Only two songs have guitar. And I played the guitar on it, but it's very vocal-centric, singer-songwriter-y, but a little bit more intelligent than just, like, the average singer-songwriter.
Do you mean lyrically, or what do you mean?
Musically. I mean lyrically as well, but just musically. Like, everyone in the band is really great, and she does a lot of cool stuff melodically that isn't just super been done before, which is cool.
Paving her own new way. All right, well, speaking of projects, I'd say recently, like a few months ago, you started officially working with Ross Robey and Scott Waldman. So as someone who doesn't know any of those guys, what is that like? I was about to say, what that like? Yeah.
What that is like is super great.
Yay.
So far, I have been extra busy. I feel like I definitely have a cool team in my corner, and I feel
we talk every Tuesday before you go shooting. It's great.
Before I go shooting, and I mean, it's great. It really couldn't be going any better, and I feel like everything kind of came together at the perfect time for me. As far as my skill level is at its all-time high right now, and I feel like the most creative I've ever felt, and I've also got a cool team behind me that's, you know, giving me more creative projects than ever before. So,
well, thank you. That was called personal gain. So thank you for that. And Ross, I speak on his behalf when we say we love you like a milkshake. And because nice. Your skill set...
Well, I appreciate that. I've got a funny thing about Ross that I'm going to add.
No, bring it up.
So, Trevor, I'm also going to put Trevor on blast from Sundress, and I'm sorry, Trevor, in advance, but...
Are you apologizing to Ross, too, or no?
He doesn't. I'm apologizing to both of them, but I have to say this. So, Trevor was telling me that he met Ross at some, like, super dirty basement show. Where is Ross lives in
Philly?
DC?
No, Ross lives in Philly.
Oh, I don't know. I always tell people he lives in DC. That's how much I know. Apparently, yeah. So he came to some super dirty basement show that Sundress played, and he was wearing like a polo, like a really nice button down, like Argyle polo or something and, like, slacks and dress shoes, and he looked like he was just, like, accidentally walked into someone's basement. And Trevor just thought it was hilarious, and Trevor, it was just like... And also, he also mentioned that Ross was short, which I you can't tell from any of the pictures. I've
he's larger than life, my friend.
Any time I've ever stalked his Facebook, I've never seen like a full body shot where I couldn't tell. And I always told Trevor he's short. And then one day he was like, "You think I'm short? You should." When I met Ross, I was like, "Oh God."
Ross is gonna kick the shit out of you. I'm just letting you know this right now. He's scary, man. He's gonna kick the shit out of you.
Well, I'm stoked.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'10".
Okay, you're an inch taller than I am. Fish is 7'4". So, like, when I'm next to him, I feel really short.
Nice. That's why you're up in his face.
Yeah, I'm all up in his grill, dude. All
you're
up in it.
On a milk crate.
Yeah, I stand on them milk crates. I guess today with my BA in English, I'm trying to utilize as much poor grammar as possible. So, speaking of poor grammar in my English degree, look at this transition. You're going to be so proud of me. Teaching. You are an unusual guy because you actually, you give back, well, for money. But talk to me about your teaching career. It's pretty sweet.
Teaching career is unorthodox in the sense that I don't have like a position teaching anywhere, but I do give seminars on advanced Pro Tools and
that takes a skill.
Like arranging tech to community colleges around here in the area. And I also have community college classes that come into the studio, and we do like a couple-hour-long session just asking me questions and me giving the most honest upfront answers that I can, whether it's about, like software or hardware gear or instrument. I mean, just anything. Anything they can think of asking me, they can, and we listen to a bunch of songs and we talk about them and all sorts of stuff. And then I also... really occasionally, I'm not doing this at the moment, but occasionally I'll take on like a production student who comes once a week, and I kind of just help them get on their way in the production world.
I mean, that's great. I mean, you didn't, when you were learning yourself, when a lot of people didn't realize you can learn music or you can record music with computers, that would have been nice if you had that. I mean, granted, there's two schools of thought. There's the school of thought where you might have learned a little bit because you did it all yourself with trial and error, but having a guide while you do trial and error would have been really helpful for you, I'm sure.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And I did have some mentors around town. There was a guy that was like significantly older than me named Matt Grabe, who was a cool producer around here that helped me out when I was younger. And, there was definitely some people that helped me out along the way. But it definitely would have been nice to have someone to just ask a bunch of questions and get straight up answers from.
You didn't have like a main mentor because it's with the producers that we work with, I'd say Ross and I manage four. Two of them one of them's like you, and that Kim, she just did it herself and learned, and obviously had help here and there, but both Dave Dominguez and Alex Arias were more engineers first, you know?
Yeah, weren't they? They kind of did the whole kind of work at a studio kind of thing?
Yeah. Alex used to be Matt Cerletic's, you know, go-to engineer and go-to helper, and Matt Cerletic did Matchbox 20, which, like, if you think of, like, the biggest records of the 90s, like, that's one of them, which is why. And that's when people were buying music. And he did Santana's Smooth. You know, he's, like, as big as it gets. So he worked for that. And when he decided to go off on his own was recently, and that's when we started working with him because we're trying to brand him as a producer, as, like, engineer-turned-producer. Even though he's done a lot of stuff on his own, it's just, like, he's more known as an engineer. But you're more known as a producer, and it's really badass that you paved that way yourself. So... props.
Well, I appreciate that. And yeah, to me, I love engineering, but I would never be able to do it for a living. It's just not, I wouldn't be able to help myself from being like, ooh, that's not the right chord, or, oh, no, no, that harmony's right, or that's not in tune at all, or, like, I'd have a really hard time just engineering something. So
yeah, you have a hard time shutting up, so that would be a difficult thing for you.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, I can understand. It's like when you when you hear a live performance and you hear someone pitchy, like, that's what you hear more than everything else. And to be the guy who's, like, kind of underneath it, plugging stuff in and can't say anything, because you'd be out of line. You'd be really out of line if you said something. So it's good that you actually get paid to be a dick. It's great.
Yes. That's true. It's funny, Trevor, and I've had other people call me, like, the vocal Nazi. That's, like, apparently my
Too soon, mom. Dude. Too soon. Come on. This is Waldman's Words. We don't want to hear about Nazis on this show. It's, like, a little bit too much. I know what you mean. I know your intent. But cool it, buddy.
Hey, man. Don't make me, you know, next time you come in and do a track, I'll be the vocal Nazi on you, man.
We have enough experience with those people, and we don't enjoy working with them.
That's hilarious.
This just took a completely dark turn on Waldman's Words.
Yeah, let's liven it up. Let's lighten it up.
But that's what we do.
Thanks to you, man. You got all fucking...
Typical Curtis fashion, blaming others for his own misfortunes. Yeah, no, I blame myself. It was me. I took something intentionally the wrong way, and I'm sorry. I hope that we can move forward with the rest of this conversation. So we've got a little bit of time left, but what advice would you give to a young kid in Mississippi, aside from not becoming morbidly obese? Okay, so less powdered sugar. a kid in Mississippi who wants to break into recording. Like, or what advice would you give for Scott Waldman or Mike Fishkin who want to produce someday? Like, I'm really curious because you're doing it. This is your job. So let's.
Sure. I've got some advice here. I would say a couple things. You can and will be able to make good sounding recordings in your room with minimal amounts of equipment. And, you know, I learned this the hard way throughout the years that equipment can make you incrementally better, but it will not make your recordings good. So just knowing that it's a lot more about learning the techniques than it is about buying nice stuff and spending your money on, you know, some sort of, like, subscription. I mean, nowadays there's, like, so many subscriptions you can get for, like, YouTube tutorials and things like that, where you can just learn so much from YouTube and other, you know, media outlets and stuff, that there's just really no, I guess there's no excuse for just jumping in and doing it in an uneducated way. You can become, like, highly educated on the subject really quickly and with not very much gear and not very much space, and be able to make something really, really great. And just know that it's not so much about the equipment and about the money, and it's just about you and you know, what you're willing to do creatively.
And the song. No amount of polish can save a crap song.
I agree. Like, that Sundress record, I cut all of the guitars in my apartment and then reamped them at the studio. But I personally tracked all the guitars on an Apogee Duet and my laptop.
Can you explain what the first thing was? Because it sounded Farsi, and I have no idea what you just said.
Reamping?
No, that you tracked all the guitars on an Apogee Duet, and I didn't understand what you said.
Oh, on an Apogee Duet, which
Thank
is
you.
Like a $400 interface. And
is that cheap? I'm not sure.
What was that?
Is that a cheap interface? Like, I'm not 100% certain on the finances.
Not cheap in quality, but cheap in price.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Interfaces can go all the way up to, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. But the Apogee Duet is just a two-channel conversion unit and super entry-level. But I cut all the guitars on that and then, you know, came to the studio and reamped them through real amps and everything. But, you know, I mean, I did that in my apartment while my girlfriend was sleeping and the cats were jumping around, you know? And,
Wow. Well, that record sounds really big. It's honestly a little less put together, right? That's one of my favorite albums of the year. And I'm not just saying that because you worked on it. It's just so catchy, especially the horn arrangement in track two.
Down, 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 boom. Yeah.
Was that you?
That I didn't play the horns, but I helped arrange the horns.
That's amazing. Where did you track? Did you track those in the studio?
Yeah. So we did the drums in the studio and vocals at the studio and the horns at the studio. But almost all the bass and all of the guitar, I cut myself. They were on tour while I was wrapping up a lot of the albums. So
you really are a fifth member then.
All that album guitar at my apartment.
I mean, that's unorthodox. You really are in the band without the touring part. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, this song that we just did, Trevor came in, and it was just basically me and Trevor wrote the song. And then I had Garrett, the drummer, come in. He played the drums, then I played all of the guitar, and then I played all the guitar and bass and did all the programming and stuff. And then Forrest came in and did his vocals, and that's generally how Sundress songs come to life. Trevor comes in with the idea. Sometimes it's just like a verse or a really cool lyric or something, and we'll just cruise from there and just make songs.
His lyrics are great, too. I'm a fan of them from top to bottom, so.
He's a cool dude in general, and I think that.
And he's scared of you, right?
He's a little bit scared of me, but probably I like that. I like that because it keeps our relationship fun.
Okay, good. Well, I think a good producer should scare the shit out of the band and never make them truly comfortable. So that's a good thing. So we're almost done. If you could, I guess, close out with, I mean, how can people check out your music? How can people even get a hold of you if they want to ask you a question?
Sure. You are welcome. Anyone is welcome. And I would definitely love if you were to check out my website, which is just curtisdouglas.com. And you can get a hold of me through there. There's a contact page on the website, which ironically doesn't go to me. It goes to Scott. So if you want to get a hold of me personally,
you can't.
You can't necessarily. But my phone number is, no, I'm just kidding.
1-900.
Yeah, 1-800. Ross is short.
Oh, fuck, dude. He's going to murder you. He's seriously going to murder you. Ross, I'm sorry in advance. I defend your honor. You are my work husband.
No, but Ross, I actually like Ross a lot more than Scott, so it's cool.
Well, this show is going to be over soon, so thank you so much for coming. No, seriously, what other ways could people get a hold of you? Or not get a hold of you necessarily, or hear your...
Here, okay, so on my website, there's a bunch of music for people to listen to. Recent notable things to check out would be The Sundressed, A Little Less Put Together. By the time this interview comes out, the Steph Teppan Timekeeper album. Check out some cool older work. Check out the Eagles and Drag album. It's super heavy and just great. There's, you know, just kind of a discography on the website, and feel free to jump around and check any of that out. Also, I did a really cool album for this band called Castro called No Mud, No Lotus, which has some really
reggae.
Awesome songs on it. What was that?
I just yelled reggae for no reason.
Reggae, for sure. It's not reggae. It's cooler than reggae. Not that reggae isn't cool.
Reggae isn't cool. You heard it first.
But yeah, check those out. Feel free to contact me through my Facebook producer page, which also is checked by Ross and Scott, so you're screwed there. Pretty much the only way to contact me personally is by soliciting my contact information through Ross and Scott.
It's honestly the best way to do it. So thank you so very much for doing the show. I appreciate your time, and I'm sure I'll talk to you in about 5 minutes.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, you guys, and it's very much so appreciated. And I had a great
time. I did not see that coming.
What?
Oh, God, I made a joke that went nowhere. I did not see that coming.
Off the air.
All right, bye.